this little effort of ours that's been going on all these years now runs not on a model of profiteering. It runs not on a share price model. It runs on your goodwill. It runs because you have determined that this program is worth having, that this network is worth keeping around. And it never ceases to both inspire and amaze me to see the way that y'all step up to make sure that we do survive. And it has been, as noted before, a brutal July, starting with the storm that blew through Appalachia and knocked us off the air for a week and a half and pretty much ate up everything we had to try to, well, just stay going. And as a consequence, we had amazing good help, both from the Horn family, the Truth Seekers, Mike and Kathy Malloy, and it made the difference between absolute misery and being able to get through that difficult, difficult time at all. And so, like I said, we're trying to just get out of July in one piece. And toward that end, I received a communication from our buddy Sal just a little bit before showtime, and he wanted to offer up a Titanic Tuesday challenge. Sal has $100, and for those of you who are willing to kick in $10 a piece or $5 or whatever you can help do to help, he'll match it up to the first $100. So if you've got five, he'll turn it into 10. If you've got 10, he'll turn it into 20. Up to the first $100, so that with Sal and what you do, hopefully we can close the program tonight at $200, and that would get us almost halfway to completely done. We start the program tonight, needing to raise 45 $10 Thrifty 250 contributors to get us through the end of July, and that'll get us out of the woods. So especially, if you can, and if you have not this month, if you'd like to kick in toward matching Sal's challenge, it would be wonderful, and it would be tremendously helpful. You know, we are here in Washington, D.C., working on the AIC campaign. Okay, I'm getting turn up your mic. And frankly, all right, there's some more. I don't know how much more before it begins falling apart, but Agnes will let me know. And see, that's the other part. I'm here in Washington, D.C. My beloved spouse, my bride, my darling wife, Agnes, who once upon a time was the every night producer of this program, has stepped in to answer the phones and get the program out to the stream there from the studio in the hills and hollers of almost level West by God, Virginia. So when you call the program tonight, that's Agnes that you're talking to. And for a change, the phone will actually be answered instead of just sticking you on hold like I do, because, you know, I'm rude and I'm in the middle of a radio show and can't just always pick the phone up. So that's who that is on the other end of the phone. You know the numbers, of course. 877-443-2366, 877 the numeral 4, head on your nickel, of course, if you want to save us the freight of the toll-free charge, 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, @gmail.com. And, of course, the chat room is free and easy to use. And, you know, there's a wonderful little crowd forming there, even as we speak. So, thanks for the update. From Isaac and Kevin both. I appreciate it. Well, we appreciate it. That's the only way we find out if this is all working, because much of this, based on the way things operate here, is a work in progress. Okay, thanks, Dr. John. You were low, but good now. Great, awesome. And the what, Ray? What? Huh? Sound great on iTunes. You are rude. Well, yes, I am. And not to mention crude and disgusting. But I try to rein it in a little bit once showtime starts. So here, hopefully those technical tweaks have helped a little bit. There's not a lot that Agnes can do on her end without things, signals degrade, and there's science involved, and cosines and tangents and Avogadro's number, and I just get lost. But if you do want to engage in conversation on the program, it really does work. We've tested it already. And hopefully we'll start the conversation portion of the program here in a little bit. But just to give you an idea, you know, we talked at length last night, since it was Moran Monday, we talked at length about Dr. Jonathan Borak. And after the show was over, you know, David from Maine mentioned that image of Brack from Space Ghost, who periodically, you know, I'm thinking, you know, where's my wristband disintegrator?
Brack.
I've been giggling ever since. Little bug-like creature.
Yeah, the hillbillies aren't necessarily stupid. They just live in an unhelpful environment.
Right. But that's not necessarily where we're going, but it is all, you know, because we are here to do a job, and we've been working on it all day. One of the nice things about being here is being able to work with my colleague, Bo Webb, who is in the next room with Ferg, Horn intern, recently promoted from junior grade with, as Dr. John noted, holodeck privileges on days that don't have R's in them. Yeah, that kind of lets him out of at least half the weekend. Okay, thanks, guys. Definitely better, I'm hearing here. So that helps. That helps a lot. No, we're here working on the 8th campaign because, as you know, the 8th campaign and the 8th bill, the 8th Act, Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, H.R. 5959, introduced by Representative Dennis Kucinich and Representative Louise Slaughter and 15 other original co-sponsors, is the only real hope that Appalachia has for some kind of relief from the ravages of mountaintop removal. And that's just the truth. It really is. You can go to aikact.org to learn more, to take action. Contact your member of the House of Representatives and then contact us and either I or Bo or Ferg or all three of us together or some other member of the AIC team will wind up knocking on doors and saying, hey, we know your constituents are writing you about this. Why haven't you gotten on board? No. Thank you. Thank you very kindly. Robert Phase 5 from the chat room says, dear Bob and Agnes, it all sounds fine here in Australia, and it all sounded fine yesterday. I want to move to Australia where everything sounds fine. It was a little dodgy last night trying to play music and me talking over bumpers and things like that, but we may have worked out some of those kinks. I feel remarkably more comfortable this evening, and hope we've got about 2 hours and 45 minutes of good radio in us tonight. It's been kind of, well, it's like walking through a sponge around here. I mean, nasty hot. Not so much hot, but dear God, the humidity. And relentlessly so. Anybody who's ever spent any time during the summer in Washington, D.C., knows exactly of which I speak. And, I mean, sweltering does not begin to touch it. Now, I wanted to mention a couple of things. If you go to headonradionetwork.com, or if you follow my Twitter feed, at Bob Kincaid, I can't resist just snapping the occasional photograph of the lunacy that is being in the nation's capital. It ain't just the heat that brings out the crazy around here. You know, we're not living the rich and fabulous playboy life here. It's a basement. The 8HQ is frankly a basement apartment. It's a one-room basement apartment. But it makes it possible for us to get a lot of work done, and it's within easy reach of the places where we need to do the work. And that's this space, this 8 headquarters, is the heart and soul of the work that has to be done. Because, you know, Appalachian people can't wait for somebody else to come and save them anymore. Because if somebody else was going to save us, we would have been saved by now. 1976, there was a move to just end surface mining, and instead we wound up with something called the Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act, SMCRA, which wound up not curtailing strip mining, but making it worse. And that's because we let people who were outside Appalachia, of course I was just a teenager at the time, I was just a 13-year-old, but people outside Appalachia said, no, 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 you hillbillies, sit still, be quiet. We'll decide what's good for you. And of course, there's a direct, bright line that runs from SMCRA in 1976, 1977, all the way to the beginning of mountaintop removal. You may recall that, for those of you who have read it, I think it's in God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, or maybe Breakfast of Champions. I can't recall which, but anyway, 1972 or 1973, Kurt Vonnegut identified, yeah, because he was a visionary, because he was ahead of his time, Kurt Vonnegut identified mountaintop removal as something that stood a real chance of absolutely making West Virginia uninhabitable. I'm checking now to see if I can find it. Reverbo was the one who gave it to me. And I'm trying to find... Oh, where it is. Because it's such a brilliant passage. But Kurt Vonnegut was one of the first ones to write anything about the ravages of strip mining and mountaintop removal. And the first mountaintop removal operation coincided with the publication of this novel. Ah, come on, are you out there, Reverbo? Are you listening tonight? Well, I don't see it right now, so if he is, maybe he'll shoot it to me. It's a brilliant passage, and I've read it before. It deserves to be brought out once in a while. But anyway, there's a bright line that runs from strip mining and the Surface Mine Control and Reclamation Act all the way to mountaintop removal and the hell that has yawned open here. So we can't wait around for the smart people to do it for us anymore. We have to do it for ourselves. And that's what we're doing here. In a little apartment, in the basement of a building, and we are walking the soles off our shoes. And since we're here, we get a chance to work together and work on some messaging and knock on some doors. We've got meetings tomorrow, the day after, meetings on Friday, meetings on Monday, maybe Tuesday, and then they go home. Because if you're a member of Congress, and this is really special, if you're a member of Congress, guess what you get to do? You get to take the entire month of August off. And then you come back after Labor Day, and it's like that old joke about coffee breaks over back on your head. And it's downhill to November and the elections, and it's very difficult to get anything accomplished. No, not quite Southeast Asia hot, Sparky, but hot. Benedict, I don't know if I crank it up here any more than it already is, the distortion will become profound, I suspect. There's a little more, but I'll start getting nasty notes from John Fox if I go any further out. But anyway, we are not living the life of Riley here. but we're getting the work done. And there is a joy to simply living so that others, or there's a joy to living simply so that others may simply live. And what I mean by that is, we're not hitting fabulous restaurants every night. We're not swilling champagne or any of that, dancing the night away. For all we know, you wouldn't know there was a restaurant in D.C. or anything else. But there's a joy in it. Beau soaked some black beans earlier today and had them simmering all day. And we pulled together a little antipasti. You know, some pickled this and marinated that. A few slices of cheese. And then at the very end, Ferg chiffonaded some basil leaves. Beau made some cornbread mix. And they got creative and made fried cornbread because there's no oven here. You can't bake it. And mercy sakes, you want to talk about good. I've never had cornbread with basil in it. But with those black beans, we could plate this stuff up and probably charge $15 for it upstairs. But it is a simple life, but it is such a joy to be doing the work. So that's why we're here. And in the course of, we're not driving anywhere or taking cabs, and you really, it would be ridiculous to take the metro. And so when you walk around on Capitol Hill, and in D.C. generally, especially along the mall or near the White House or near the Capitol or the Supreme Court, you see the very weirdest Washington has to offer. And I mean weird. Now, the last time we were here, lo and behold, they were working, the lights were burning in the Supreme Court across the street almost all night long, even on a Sunday. And that's before the Affordable Care Act decision came out. Well, we got here Sunday and no lights in the Supreme Court. They'd gone to bed. And I can't help think that it was also deliberate that before the Affordable Care Act decision came out, that majestic facade of the Supreme Court building was there for everybody to see. Now that the Affordable Care Act decision has come out, lo and behold, it's all covered up in scaffolding. I guess because since we have a mindset in this country that wants government to drown in a bathtub, that includes having marble and granite dissolve somewhere along the way. But the front of the Supreme Court is now covered up in scaffolding in order to, I guess, keep it from just falling apart. There's massive work being done around it. You can hear the saws that cut through stone, and it's a terrible high-pitched whine and a grind and a rumble. But we walked back behind the, because since Ferg's here, he's really, really handy. You know, you feed a boy for 16 years so that the boy can eventually be a little bit of help. Well, you do it because you love him too, but the help is a bonus. So we walked over back behind the Supreme Court, past the Folger Shakespeare Library. Boy, do I want to go in there someday. Probably never will. And over onto Pennsylvania, because we were just going to get a case of bottled water. Because the water here tastes a little like swimming pool. No, who am I kidding? The water here tastes a lot like swimming pool. No, it doesn't taste like swimming pool. It is swimming pool. That you could, yeah. get too close to this stuff and your eyes will burn. So we were walking over to, and there's no real supermarkets or anything. It really is kind of a food desert if it's not some expensive restaurant, and I don't care what they're serving, all the restaurants are expensive. Sorry, I should have muted for that. But we walked over to one of the little local grocers and got a case of bottled water. And on the way there, we were crossing Pennsylvania, and at a pretty far distance, I could see some people handing out flyers. And I looked at Ferg, and I said, 10-1, they're either LaRouchers or baggers. Because they had a big poster with Barack Obama's face on it. And generally, when you've got a big poster with the president's face on it, odds are there's nothing good going to come of it. You know what I mean? So I said, you want to take the bet, Ferg? And he said, no. You're growing up. You're getting smarter. So we went on across, and we crossed it. You know, the Pennsylvania Avenue kind of veers there on Capitol Hill, back behind the Capitol. And we crossed all the way across, and lo and behold, yes, it was a, what do you figure, 5 feet by 4 feet, one of those collapsible posters that sits, and it's got its own little spring-loaded stand. And there it is. A portrait of Barack Obama with a Hitler mustache. Really? A Hitler mustache. Now, this is not the program that you want to be tuning into if you want unabashed Obama praising. He gets as good as he gives here. And when he screws up, you know, we're the one. Hell, I'm the one who suggested that we needed a cabinet-level secretary whose job is to smack him on the back of the head and say, Jesus, Barack! I mean, that was us. So, no, we are not sycophants by any stretch of the imagination. But really, please. The Hitler mustache. Isn't it a little overworked? I mean, can you really put a Hitler mustache on somebody? Who looks at AIPAC and says, I've got your back? Because I don't think you can. I mean, a Hitler mustache, the little Charlie Chaplin mustache. And so I took a photograph of the dweeb standing next to his dweeby photo. And yes, at the bottom, what does it say? LaRouche Pack. How did I freaking know? Well, you get kind of good at this after a while. Ferg looking at me going, you nailed it, Dad. There's not a lot. You know, it's kind of like those megalithic stone walls that the ancient Peruvian peoples used to build. You know, there's no cement, there's no mortar. And the blocks just fit perfectly together in these weird geometric shapes, and you can't fit a playing card between them because there's no space between them. And as far as I'm concerned, there's not a hell of a lot of space between the LaRouchers and the baggers and the birthers and the deathers and the tenthers and the booger eaters.
Same, same. You know what I mean? Really. So there, and the guy tries to hand me his tract and said, no. I just wanted your goofy photograph, that's all. I mean, is it really, you tell me, because this may just be a character flaw. No, they were passing out flyers this time, Lottie. Little Xeroxed sheets. And if I'd had a little more presence of mind, I'd have brought it back with me and we'd have been having a high old time by now. But God, they're loons. Because even for a moment, even assuming for a moment, that there might be some degree of legitimacy in whatever issue it was that they were hustling, doesn't it lose all legitimacy when you put the Hitler mustache on the giant picture of Barack Obama? I mean, why not just Photoshop his hair away and give him the little beanie and make him Mussolini? It's all the same. So I took the photo and I sent it to Agnes, and at some point during the program, if you run over to headonradionetwork.com, you can probably find the photo. And I'm trying to... Oh, there it is. Is that it? There, that, yes. There's another photo over there as well, once it goes up. I think Agnes sent it off to News Ninja Susan, and News Ninja Susan is putting it up on the site. You might have some curiosity. The photo of the weirdo LaRoucher, with his Obama as Hitler poster, that one kind of speaks for itself, even if it sort of speaks in a gibbering, babbling, idiotic kind of way. The other photo, once it goes up, is anything but self-explanatory. That photograph will really, really, really need explaining. Yeah. Michael, Kid A from the chat room. Bob, I really must ask you a question. Oh, Jesus. This is Titanic Tuesday. Must ask you a question. You people have no shame. You people! Are you absolutely certain it wasn't a Charlie Chaplin stash? I mean, I think we would both agree there are many issues that President Obama has been silent, you know, silent films about, on which we wish he'd speak up. Just trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. Oh, Jesus, Michael, the LaRouchers don't need the benefit of the doubt so much as they need a Thorazine dart in the neck. No, it was definitely... No, that was the Austrian interpretation of that, the Austrian interpretation of that particular piece of masculine tonsorial lip hair art. Sheesh. Oh, hey, a little reminder, you know, we started a premium last night. If this helps folks who want to jump in and help out with Sal's Titanic Tuesday challenge. John Fox obtained some copies of a magnificent album that was never released in the United States. One is gone.
A second one went a little bit ago, but there is a third. And if you'd like to kick $50 toward Sal's Titanic Tuesday challenge, that copy can be yours. The artist is a magnificent vocalist and guitar player by the name of Leanna Rose. The album is called Soak Up the World. We had a couple of tracks. We played a couple of tracks last night. Agnes probably has another track or two queued up. If you'd like to have a copy, shoot a note and kick $50 into the kitty, and it'll be there for you. So, you know, just a reminder. And what a voice! What a creative what a creative soul she has, and the musicianship behind her is rock solid. So that there's that. No, and the photograph that's going to take some explaining. If Agnes would just please tell me once it's gone up, I'd appreciate it. Because until then, we're just sort of talking about crazy stuff. But it is Titanic Tuesday here on Capitol Hill and elsewhere. And in that light, I guess Titanic Tuesday is sort of an extension of Moran Monday, only bigger and broader and grander. And toward that end, a story from the Telegraph of the UK. And yes, I know what the Telegraph is. Thank you very much. And I wonder, because you probably, because we've been sort of going back and forth, and I haven't had as much time in front of the interweb tubes as I ordinarily like. You may know if this is getting more traction than I do. You may know better if this is getting traction than I do. Jesus, I hope it does. Now, you may recall on Friday, Dr. John pointed out that Michael Bloomberg, not the presidential challenger, not the president, but Michael Bloomberg was the one who had enough gumption to say something about America's toxic love affair, toxic my ass, fatal, homicidal, suicidal, matricidal, parasidal love affair with firearms. Well, it turns out that he didn't just call out Willard Romney and President Obama. He also had a little bit more data to add about where the guns and such come from. Now, as noted, we've all seen by now the photographs of the guy with the orange hair sitting in the courtroom looking what? Pick an adjective. Or an adverb. We know now how much ammunition he had. We know he ordered it online. We know that he went to at least 3 gun dealers, perhaps 4. And at each gun dealer, remember, a federally licensed gun dealer in this country is not allowed to sell you a gun if you go in and you look nuts, criminally insane, not tied down. And I'm not making light of mental illness. There are laws out there, for instance, I think they're called, what, dram shop laws? There are laws out there that say a bartender can't serve you booze if you look like you are well and truly in the tank. Well, there are also federal firearms laws that say you can't be sold a firearm if you don't appear to be in your proper mind. So apparently this shooting in Aurora, Colorado, was in the planning stages for a while. I've worked diligently to keep this guy's name out of my mind. But it was in the planning stages for a considerable period of time. And on three or four occasions, he walked into gun dealers, into gun stores. The idea that we have gun stores in this country, if you sort of pretend you're a Martian and think of it, we've got gun stores. He got his AR-15 and one of the other ones. Was it at Gander Mountain or Bass Pro Shop or both? And the guy behind the counter said, "Sure thing, I'll be happy to sell it to you. Would you like us to gift wrap it? Do you need a gift card with that, sir? You certainly look sane to me." "No thanks, I'll carry it out unwrapped." So on at least three and possibly four occasions, people made subjective judgments that he was sane. And yet the other night on my Facebook page and via Twitter, I posted the notion that, you know, you have to prove, and this is no challenge or no slur or no slight to those of us, those of the Horn family who have a hard time seeing, that before you can operate a motor vehicle, you have to prove you can see. Cops who carry guns have to pass periodic annual reviews to make sure that they're not just wandering around behind the little animals and, you know, gone around the bend. But when I psych evals. But when I suggested that if amateurs want to carry a weapon into the local grocery store to get a loaf of bread, which I've seen on more occasions than I care to admit, and really creeps me out, well, I was told that a psych eval for an ordinary citizen who wanted to tote a shooting arm, that psych evals were too subjective. And yet a subjective call by a gun dealer that somebody is sane enough to be put in ownership possession of a firearm, that's not, no problem with that. That's our God-given Second Amendment rights. See how right-wing gun logic works? Yeah, me too. So like I said, I don't know if this story is getting any traction or not. I hope it is. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, at least, it's nice to know that there's at least one politician, and really there's more than one, but not a lot more than one. It's nice to know that there's one politician who does not simply wet his pants at the mere mention of the three letters NRA. "Well, come to get me and I won't be a politician no more." New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg released information pointing out that there's a website called KSL.com. And KSL.com, oh, damn it, why did I have to name it? They run classified ads that lets folks buy and sell handguns, other firearms, ammunition drums that hold 100 rounds and shoot them all in 1 second. No background checks, no questions asked, not even a subjective judgment that the purchaser is even in the same county with the word sane. As I think Sandra noted on Friday night, I think the direct quote is, "I have a lot of issues with that plutocrat, but on this one, I'm right there with him." And I'm there too. Now, here's the kicker. I mean, here is the...
the part that'll have you jaw dropping and catching flies. Guess who owns KSL.com? Come on, this is good. KSL.com is owned by an entity called Deseret Media. I'm sure you recognize that name. Deseret Media is entirely owned by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. No, really. The Mormons own one of the nation's largest websites for swapping guns without registrations, without background checks, without nothing. The Mormons. You know, those nice little boys on the bicycles who come by and want to tell you about how the Indians were secret Jews. Children of Israel. Who apparently had AR-15s. Really? I mean, I remember that story from a while back about the fact that there was a really, really huge porn site that was owned by the Roman Catholic Church. And I thought, but it turned out to be true. That was weird enough. Here, however, we have a church that preaches the sanctity of the American family, or the family anywhere. The sanctity of the family. You know, mother stays at home and teaches the children violin and cello and piano and and they have about 19 kids. Dad goes out and does the best he can, and if the family rises high enough in the church hierarchy, they all get to wear magic underwear. I'm not persecuting anybody. They call it that. I don't. Their nickname for it is magic underwear. And so, all right, America gets this idea, this vision of Mormons as maybe being a bubble off plum, but kind of benign. Because after all, they ride bicycles and they won't drink coffee, and they're incredibly polite. They drink lots of milk. And they hustle guns on the internet. Son of a gun. And it took Michael Bloomberg, not the FBI, not the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, but Mayor Michael Bloomberg of New York City, who's tired of reading stories about New Yorkers being gunned down with illegal firearms. There ain't no such thing in America as an illegal firearm. The newspaper report that I'm looking at right now, as a matter of fact, says the KSL classifieds site presently has ads for nearly 6,000 products under its firearms and hunting section, including more than 1,000 handguns, Glocks, Smith & Wessons, Sig Sauer. All the big brands are available on the Mormon website. People trade privately without even having to identify themselves on this Mormon website. Because of that, they can buy and sell and swap guns. And there's no way
if they do anything bad with them, for anybody to ever know. There's no way for anybody to ever know where it came from, who transferred it to them, nothing. One guy trying to dispel or stem the tide of some trying to stem the tide of negative publicity said, well, we've got a statement on the website that tells people to abide by federal laws. Oh my Aiken. Yeah, I'm sure you do. I wonder if the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms couldn't do anything about it. Why? Because it's all perfectly legal. It's all completely above board. I love this ex post facto justification. No, the responsibility for the transaction is that of the parties involved. This is just like any other transaction. A vehicle, a lawnmower, a bicycle. Madman takes lawnmower to movie opening, mows down 71 people. No, see, that doesn't work. It really takes a gun to do that. If he'd driven an automobile into the theater, I don't think he could have hurt 71 people. It's not just like that. Although it is kind of interesting to note, because I've seen it on a number of occasions in being challenged for daring to speak out on the fact that gun people are more interested in their gun rights than seeing six-year-olds get to be seven-year-olds. I've had a number of occasions in which people have said, well, what about cars? Hence my argument about not being able to get a driver's license without at first having some proof of being able to see. Because every time you start trying to talk about firearms in particular, there's some gun person who says, well, what about cars? Daggone, if Dr. Borak didn't do the same thing. Well, people are sick in Detroit, too, but you don't see us shutting down the auto industry like they want to shut down mountaintop removal. Why can't people, especially right-wingers, why can't they address issues without desperately trying to deflect away from them? I suspect that has a lot to do with the fact that they know that their issue, their side of the issue, is utterly, completely, and totally toxic. They spent a lot of money at Gracie Mansion in New York City, and the mayor's study indicated that 40% of firearm sales were made through private vendors rather than reputable dealers. And in the private sales, 62% carried out a background check on the folks to whom they sold the firearms. Can you reach the money onto the table there, little Timmy? Yeah, you can. Well, you're now an 8-year-old with a Glock. Jesus, it's too much. A hard story coming from Dr. John. 2 years ago, a friend of mine, a doctoral student in my program, murdered a professor in my department 50 feet from where I was working. It was in the news, so no need to hide my identity. It came out that the shooter was a diagnosed schizophrenic and couldn't pay for his meds on our salary as assistants. One good man died, and another is in prison for life. And I am terrified, says Dr. John, that a similar story will emerge regarding this man in Colorado. And there is a similar, well, it's no, it is not a similar story to what Dr. John describes, and it gives me no joy in pointing it out. But one of the first things that I mentioned on Friday as we discussed this issue, and I said it was strictly a process of my, or a function of my, of the odd way that my brain works. Well, that one thing that occurred to me has come true. And we'll talk about that in the second issue, second hour. Coming up, we've got the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. Take a little break and come back. By the way, Kevin, who has described to us on occasion the fact that he is visually challenged, Kevin in Colorado Springs said, "Bob, I couldn't get a driver's license, but I bet I could go into a gun shop and buy a gun." I'll bet you could too, Kevin. I'll bet you could too. Because it doesn't take much. Just, not crazy, are you? Nope. Here's your gun. Enjoy your Second Amendment rights. Whew. That is crazy. So we'll take a little break and come back. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. The Sal's Titanic Tuesday challenge is on the table and as yet unresponded to. It's a great way to pick up a nice collector's item, really. You can't get it here. Leanna Rose's Soak Up the World for a $50 contribution, or any portion thereof will help match Sal's Titanic Tuesday challenge. Your help is what keeps all of this going. This is the horn. This is the horn. And I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be right back.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, July 19, my birthday, 2012.
The Midwest and Northeast bracing for more scorching high temperatures. We're already in the middle of our fourth heat wave of the summer.
Look at this massive Havu coming our way. And it's actually raining inside the dirt cloud.
U.S. weather is going crazy.
Hot town, summer in the city, and in the country, and in the mountains, and on the farms, and in the desert. The GOP goes to bat for Monsanto. The FDA bans BPA, sort of. Plus,
the sky hasn't fallen in.
Australia's new carbon tax fails to cause economic catastrophe.
All of that failure and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
104 to 106 degree weather we had last week just pretty much cooked the corn.
Cooked them in the field. Some of them have just, literally cooked all the way through.
Cooked corn. What are you people complaining about? Sounds delicious. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen.
Wait. Happy birthday, Brad.
Oh, thank you, Desi.
It is your birthday today.
It is my birthday, and of course, across the country, it's hotter than hell. So I guess that's how the nation is celebrating.
That's right. It has been a week of wild weather across the eastern half of the country with more crop failures. And on Wednesday in New York City, the heat wave was broken by a sudden, intense storm, says Stephen Colbert.
These are the greatest people in the world. You have no idea what they have been through today. 145 degrees. Followed by apocalyptic lightning and hail. It's as if somebody opened the damn Ark of the Covenant out there today.
Was it really that bad or just another summer storm?
Oh, no. It was really that bad. It was so much water so quickly that it flooded several subway stations.
The storm that passed through New York City this afternoon dumped so much water that across the system were springing leaks.
Yeah, it sounds like just another day in the New York City subways.
Not in the 34th Street subway.
A couple hours of rain, and this 34th Street subway station had its own geyser, waterfall, and even its own pool.
Well, that doesn't sound bad. Sounds quite refreshing.
Just imagine what could possibly be in all of that water. It's disgusting.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's that.
Meanwhile, it's official. June 2012 was the fourth warmest June on record globally. That follows the warmest May on record. The U.S. Drought Monitor now says 61% of the continental United States is in exceptional or severe drought, the nation's worst drought in 50 years. Exceptional droughts and extreme heat waves aren't just bad for crops and people, but bad for rivers and power generation as well. The New York Times reports that barge traffic has dropped 70% in some areas of the Mississippi River due to low river flows. In the east, hotter rivers are complicating cooling operations at coal and nuclear power plants that rely on river water for cooling their operations.
The river water is itself too hot to cool the plants?
In many cases, yes.
Oh, man.
Meanwhile,
iceberg, run ahead!
NASA satellites have confirmed that a new iceberg has broken off the Petermann Glacier in Greenland. It's twice the size of Manhattan. And what's unusual, scientists say, is that it's the second massive iceberg to break off in 2 years, when normally they'd expect to see something like that every 10 to 20 years. The FDA bans BPA in baby bottles now that BPA is no longer in baby bottles. BPA, or bisphenol A, is a plastics chemical that mimics estrogen and has been linked to reproductive and neurological development problems in children. After years of pressure from public health groups, the Food and Drug Administration announced this week a new ban on BPA in baby bottles. But it's only after the U.S. Chemistry Council, an industry group, asked them to, confirming that its member companies have already stopped using it.
Very courageous of the FDA.
Speaking of weird stuff in your food, House Republicans are working hard on behalf of Monsanto and Dow Chemical, manufacturers of genetically modified organisms, or GMOs for short. The GOP is quietly adding measures to the 2012 Farm Bill that would exempt GMO companies like Monsanto and Dow from legal liability. It has to allow higher contamination of non-GMO crops and force automatic backdoor approval of new GMO products if federal regulators take too long. Finally, Australia officially launched its controversial nationwide carbon tax on that country's industrial polluters earlier this month, with revenues to go to Australian households. And yet, as noted by Australia Trade Minister Craig Emerson, the carbon tax has failed to produce the economic catastrophe predicted by Australian conservatives.
There has been an enormous scare campaign with claims that a leg of lamb will cost $100, entire communities will be wiped off the map. Gladstone, the Illawarra, Portland, Kwinana, and of course, Whyalla, and I was in Whyalla just yesterday. Whyalla's just fine.
Oh man, the first nation in the world to institute a carbon tax to actually charge polluters for the price of pollution, and Armageddon hasn't come?
Not so far.
Give it time. For all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation or consider it a birthday present to help sponsor the Green News Report. We rely on you, not Monsanto or Dow Chemical, to keep telling the truth over your public airwaves. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Hot town, summer in the city, back of my neck getting dirty and gritty.
She may seem a little quiet tonight, but boy, her cooking still tastes good. She may seem a little distant in conversation, she'd give you the world though if she could. She may take a walk on the porch alone, you'll find her talking to stars and thinking about days gone. You don't have to judge her, just hold her close, 'cause now she needs you the most. So when she's crying, wipe her tears, and if she can't find her light, then share your shine. And if she can't seem to fly, 'cause she's got too much on her mind, then hold. Even angels need angels sometimes. And he may come home from work just a little late, he doesn't stay much, he's just reflecting on his week. He turns the TV on, forgets to kiss you on your cheek. You're in for a quiet one tonight, till in 10 minutes he's asleep, yeah. And as you lay the blanket over and tuck it round, well, why not save him once one night on the lounge, yeah. And you don't have
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, indeed. 13 minutes past the hour. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. We are, as I noted, broadcasting live from Capitol Hill and the headquarters of the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign, the AIC campaign. You can learn everything you could ever possibly want to know about the AIC campaign by simply going to AIKACT.org, AIKACT.org. You can also email questions to me, or if you want to know more about the AIC campaign from the point of view of somebody besides me, and I highly recommend that, if you're out in or around Orange County, California this Sunday evening, my buddy, my colleague, Poe Webb, was doing dishes, but he has run to find out the date and time. He's already done the interview, and it will be airing on this station out in Orange County this Sunday evening, as noted, and I'm just waiting to find out what the call sign is and what the time is. Might even find out the name of the interviewer. You know, Orange County is noteworthy, and you know, you in California know this far better than I, for being a bastion of right-wing Republicanism. So it was quite inspiring to know that Bo got a chance to do some radio out there. And here in just a minute, I'm sure he'll come running back in here to tell me tell me what the call sign of the station is. A little reminder, if you want to keep this whole effort going, we've got a Titanic Tuesday challenge out offered by Sal, and if 20 people give 5, or 10 people give 10, or 2 people give 50, or 4, 25, any combination, Sal has offered to match the first $100 that come in this evening in an effort to get us to the end of what has been an absolutely brutal, brutal July. So that is most helpful, and we genuinely appreciate it. Be going to the phones here in a minute. You know the number. Thanks, Randy. I know Agnes is kind of new to running the Green News Report, and we'll probably have the other today's Green News Report maybe at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. Sunday, July the 29th. 8:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Call sign KSPA AM 1510. Joe Lyons is the host. KSPA AM 1510, 8:30 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, this Sunday evening. Financial news and talk radio with Joe Lyons. Thanks, Bo. Suddenly, Bo has turned into Marcel Marceau back there. Did you hear him wave? Yeah, okay. Just when you least expect it. Email coming in from our buddy Jack in Shreveport. He said, Bob, I think I heard the What About Cars come back from a caller on another show a day or two ago. The host replied that cars have a useful purpose, like getting people to work, whereas the purpose of firearms mostly is just to kill people. Jack says he thinks it may have been the Hartman show. Yeah, there's that. And let's go to the phones right now. I'm told that Kevin is on line one. Now, bear in mind, if you want to jump in, see, the phones are working fine. You know the number, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or if you want to save us the freight, 304-658-3333. And I'll simply remind you that the person taking your calls is the lovely and talented Agnes. Now, every time she whispers into the microphone during a regular show in the studio, y'all go, oh, get Agnes back, get Agnes back. Well, Agnes is back. Okay? If you want to talk to Agnes, you got to do it while I'm here in D.C. Are you there, Kevin?
Yes, I am.
How are you?
I'm doing fine, other than the mess in Aurora. But I'm hanging in there, and I'm seriously thinking of experimenting with that, what I wrote you about earlier, about going into a gun shop, because I think I could actually do it.
And I have no doubt whatsoever.
Yeah. But
It's a big link here, and I think it's kind of broken, so you'll have to tell me the essence of the story that you sent me.
Basically, they were talking about how that kid got his guns and ammo, and I don't have it right in front of me. I can't think of the name of the ammo place that he got all that ammunition from, but they found the order slip for it in the garbage can there at the apartments that he lived in, and no questions asked, no nothing. He got, I forget how many rounds of ammo, 3,000, something like that. And
I thought it was like 6,000 he had, but at that point, 3,000, 6,000.
Right, more than enough. And the thing that really got me was this gun shop owner, online website owner in both there in Denver, was saying how, you know, he felt bad for the victims, but he's celebrating his Second Amendment rights. And therefore, he should make sales like that with absolutely no background check, no nothing. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, how can you don't feel any guilt for the victims? You don't feel as if you're responsible for the deaths of those people, and not only the deaths, but for the lives that you have changed forever. And the word "you" is needed there. I consider that guy no different than the people at Penn State who covered up the assaults there.
Who looked the other way. I said, who looked the other way. Yeah.
Exactly. And in a sense, that's what he did. He looked the other way. And the other thing I took from that article, Bob, is something that's been bothering me, is we are fighting for online privacy. You've got CISA, SOPA. We've seen our rights as Americans, court privacy and that taken away over the past 10, 12 years, and yet this guy makes a purchase of 6,000 rounds of ammunition and it's not detected. I find that really strange. You know, I'm not knocking Homeland Security or anybody else. What I am saying is that They're so wanting to check our emails online and check our phone conversations. Why can't they be checking online purchases like that? You know, granted, well, this guy in Colorado is as much a terrorist as any supposed Al-Qaeda terrorist. No different.
Sure he is, Kevin. And if I'm going to offer a serious answer to the question you posed, and I'm going to treat it as not being strictly rhetorical, there is a real answer. There's no organization out there that can threaten to remove people from office, remove politicians from office, because they've got an alleged 2 million voter database who will do exactly as they are told and march when they're told to march. And when the word froggy comes down from on high, we'll yell how high and how long and how far. What you're talking about essentially is the influence of the National Rifle Association on American politics.
And there's a bunch of different examples of that. You know, you mentioned this guy selling all this ammo online with impunity. Well, it didn't. It hasn't always been that way. It really, really hasn't. This is a relatively new phenomenon, and it was at the National Rifle Association's instigation that these laws were changed. The fact of the matter is, there was nothing illegal in what this freak did to get all of that ammunition.
No.
But it's only that way because the NRA demanded it. I think the statistic is, or the time frame is, that from 1968 until 1986, 18 years, ammunition was a regulated thing. And you could not buy bullets in the mail. You just couldn't. Which makes perfectly good sense to me. But, naturally, the National Rifle Association said that that was a violation of our freedom.
Yep.
And so, so a thing called the McClure-Volkmer Act was passed, and it became legal to purchase one's bullets in the mail. Any record-keeping requirements of who bought the ammunition were repealed, and the sale of ammunition was utterly deregulated in this country.
Yep.
And now you can buy 6,000, 10,000, whatever, rounds of ammunition. If you've got the money and your little credit card number clears, that they'll bring it right to your door.
Yep.
And nobody ever even has to make that subjective judgment that a gun dealer does in a face-to-face brick and mortar firearms purchase. You know, at least the guy, if you walk in with the clown suit on, the gun dealer might actually not sell you the gun.
Yep.
If you walk in talking to your invisible friends, the gun dealer might not sell you the gun. But on the other hand, if you are sitting behind a keyboard with the clown suit on, well, the internet ammo dealer doesn't know that, doesn't care about that, doesn't want to know that, and is merely celebrating his Second Amendment right to sell you thousands of rounds of deadly ammunition that you might use for either legal or illegal means, and he doesn't care and he doesn't want to know. So,
no.
You know, this stuff doesn't happen in a vacuum, Kevin. The factors that have led up to, whether it be Virginia Tech, or the guy who tried to shoot up the Unitarian Universalist Congregation in Tennessee, or Columbine, this, or any of the other god-awful massacres that we've dealt with in the last few years. You know, we've had 32 in 30 years.
Yep.
Those things did not happen by accident. They happened because the National Rifle Association lobbied for laws and threatened politicians to make it happen, because the National Rifle Association doesn't have a damn thing to do with firearms owners and everything to do about lobbying for the sake of the gun and ammunition industry. Is that simple?
Yeah, but, you know, when this first broke on Friday night, I guarantee you there were plenty of people on the right wing that were hoping that this guy's name was something that ended with the Mideastern name, like Ali or Mustafa or whatever, or Muhammad or whatever.
Or a vowel.
And there would have been howls about how the Obama administration didn't protect our national security. But this guy can go out and purchase 6,000 rounds of ammunition, an AR-15, two Glocks, a shotgun, and nobody says a thing.
And don't forget about having the wherewithal to set up a massive series of booby traps inside his apartment. That took a lot. Exactly. That took a lot of ordnance too.
Yes, exactly. And where did that come from? Where, you know, you're talking about booby traps with bombs, presumably, and from the way the police described it, it was pretty elaborate. So I'm guessing it wasn't just a gas can tied to a door kind of thing.
Well, this guy wasn't an idiot. He was a top honors graduate of his college. He got into a very prestigious doctoral program, and then he fell apart.
Yep.
And for all we know, for reasons having to do with what Dr. John suggested. When you're dealing with that kind of, from what I understand about the way he had his apartment set up, it took a lot of brains to do that.
Yes, yep. And that's another thing about the story. And to me, we're what, 5 days past the story now, and not much has came out. I find it a little bit curious that not more has come out about this guy, because I can almost bet you that when he fell apart, he sought help from someone, and it wasn't there. Certainly, the people around him there in his apartment complexes must have noticed something. Certainly, the people that worked with him must have noticed something.
Well, one of these days, perhaps we will find out, Kevin, what it was his mother meant when the police called her, or whomever it was, and she said, "You've got the right guy."
Yep.
What did she mean? Why would she say something like that?
I would be willing to bet you, having worked in the medical field, that this young man tried to get help, his family tried to get help for him, and because he didn't have insurance, and because somebody deemed him not to be a threat to himself or others, that he was just left to wander the streets. And yet, like you say, he was a very smart person, and when a very smart person like that snaps, there are signs that you can't miss along the way. It's pretty, if you've seen it before, it's pretty striking, the symptoms that show up. And, I guess it's just all of it together that bothers me, Bob. The fact that I bet I'm right about the fact he tried to get help. I'm very upset about the fact that a person could purchase 6,000 rounds of ammunition and an AR-15 and not be checked upon. And if you notice in that same story, it said soldiers going to Iraq were also making big purchases of firearms because they got tired of waiting for it from their own government.
Well, remember what happened on January the 20th, 2009 as well, Kevin. The firearm sales and ammunition sales went through the roof because, again, that self-same National Rifle Association had said, Barack Obama's going to get your guns, and if he don't get your guns, he's going to get your bullets. And, of course, Barack Obama has done no such thing. Kevin, it's really good to hear from you, my friend, and I hope we will talk soon. You take care.
Yeah. Bob, thanks for letting me in a little bit. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's always good to hear from you, my friend.
All right. Take care out there.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. That's our good friend Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. Kevin's visually impaired, as he has noted, and consequently that's why he says he bets he could walk into a gun store in Colorado and easily obtain a firearm, and I would not bet against him on that. Clayton, who has also referenced his own visual impairment, said, "Do you think they'd sell me a gun, Bob? How about an automatic?" And I think they probably would. In Colorado, for instance, there's a loophole. There is a loophole in Colorado that get around background checks of any sort, particularly at these gun shows. You know, I remember, what was it, Ferg, a couple of years ago when we wandered over to a gun show in Somersville? Yeah, maybe, yeah. No, it wasn't last summer. But we wandered into a gun show because he wanted to see what one looked like, and I said, "Well, I think you probably need to see that." And we walked in. You know, I got a lot of "Dad, buy me a sword," that
wait,
kind of
by
thing.
Way, just to clear it up, no. Not what a gun looks like, what a gun show looks like.
Yeah, right. What a gun show looks like.
But anyway, so we walked through there, and then we got out and we got home, and found out that between the time that we had left the gun show and the time that we had gotten home, some idiot had shot himself at the gun show. No, it's not funny. It's not funny at all. Hey, y'all, watch this. But no, there's a loophole that keeps background checks from being done at gun shows. And 17 states have closed the loophole. Oddly enough, Colorado is one. So that means that the shooter had to go to a real gun dealer. The real gun dealer had to look him in the eye and decide that he looked sane enough to him, even though after he had purchased his firearms, a guy who heard him on the phone about wanting to come to a shooting range, the phone, it turns out the phone message alone was enough to make him say, he told the people that work with him at the gun range, listen, if this guy calls back, tell him the dog ate our targets or something, but we don't want him out here. That was from a phone conversation, and yet two or three gun dealers looked at him and said, nah, you look sane enough to me. You want two? He had two Glocks, one AR-15 and one shotgun. And then there's all the body armor and stuff. Jesus. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. And, that's Ferg here in the background there. There are things that could be done. Were I a betting man, and I kind of am, because remember the story earlier this evening about 10 to 1, those are LaRouchers or baggers. It's a habit. I got to break it. There are things, though, that could be done to try to lessen the likelihood of these things happening. But because of organizations like the NRA, they won't happen. They just won't. They just won't. How difficult, why isn't it a good idea to keep people from having 100-round clips for their AR-15s? I mean, really, you can't enjoy your Second Amendment rights if your clip only holds 10, if you can only kill 10 people in a minute instead of 100, that's trampling one's rights. But it's an act of futility. There's no sense in me even mentioning it. Among other things, criminals can legally order high-capacity magazines and armor-piercing rounds. And they can do it on the internet. Nobody ever has to look at them and see the clown suit or the mother tattoo on. No. Armor-piercing rounds. You know, things that are not meant. Because I have yet to see a pheasant, or a quail, or a dove, or a deer, or an elk, or a rabbit, or a varmint that was wearing Kevlar body armor. I don't know. Maybe that's something that PETA has in the works, but thus far they have not managed it. It's difficult enough to catch these animals long enough to put a little radio tag on them so you can trace them when you need them. But not yet. Yeah, John Fox, you're absolutely right. John Fox in Australia noting, I'm so glad someone's right to bear arms is more important than my kid's right to life. Seriously, FUBAR, Bob. And it is. And what's disturbing about this is the fact that it's not just somebody, it's some insane person's. Some insane person's right. We can't even make an inquiry. You really want a concealed carry, a .44 Magnum to go get a loaf of bread at the Walmart? Why in God's name should you not present a full-on psychological evaluation to show that you're sane enough to do that before they let you? Because they make the professionals go through that. Why should the amateurs be treated any differently? I mean, generally, like, you know, professional auto racing, you know, you can go really, really fast, but you can't be a professional auto racer. If you want to get out on the amateur circuit, you don't get to go as fast.
Under this theory, however, what you find out is that it's like saying we'll let the amateurs go 250 miles an hour and go flying over the walls, but the professionals, they do 110. It's nuts. It's just nuts. So it's about 22 minutes before the hour. We're about halfway through tonight's program. You know the numbers, right? 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Okay, I've got it wrong. Jay just wrote in from Yuma. Bob, that's not what happened. When the authorities called the shooter's mother, they asked her if she was Holmes's mother, and she replied, "You have the right person," confirming that she was his mother. Okay. I misunderstood. Thanks for straightening me up, Jay. Oh, God, Clayton, that's so true. Thank God I don't have the file with me. I might be tempted to play it right now. Clayton, it's absolutely true. Bob, in some of those states, you can't get a vibrator, but you can get a gun. He's not kidding. It's the truth.
Wait.
Really, it's the truth. Randall, yeah, great. Can you picture a big load of ammunition in a hot U.S. mail truck? Well, in either definition of the word hot, you don't want to. But theoretically, it's relatively inert until direct fire is attached to it. Yeah. Okay, so I promised you something a little bit ago. And this is just a little aside, because we've got other crazy things to go into on this Titanic Tuesday. Hey, Bo, you remember that right wing? I got to tell you this story because you haven't heard this yet. You remember that right wing lunatic that came down to Coal River Mountain Watch that time? That works at the radio station in Beckley. He was terrified of Nanette. Yeah. He thought the Coal River Mountain Watch folks were gonna kidnap him, and I don't know what y'all threatened to put him in a sludge pond or something. No, we don't mention his name. Well, anyway, the reason I'm mentioning this to you, Bo, is he was on his show the other day. One of the Horn family who lives over in Beckley was telling me about it. You know, he has these people who have roughly below freezing IQs that listen to him every day. And one of them was asking him, how come it is that if you dig down into the rock in West Virginia, where we're up in the mountains, how is it that you find seashells in the rocks there? And ordinarily, Bo, I would have expected his answer to be, because the devil put them there to confound the unbelievers. He said, well, caller, those shells got there because of the movements of the Titanic plates. Yes, Bo, he really said that. So ever since then, Tuesdays have become Titanic Tuesdays on the Horn for the movements of those Titanic plates. Well, way back when I was on terrestrial radio over there, I remember the day that he was explaining to everybody about how the new river flows south down to North Carolina. Yeah, exactly. This would be. Oh, God, you know, you couldn't pay him to be this dumb, but I knew I hadn't told Bo the story of... Yeah, that's true. I don't know if Jim's listening tonight, but the fact of the matter is,
that doofus in Beckley also said that God put that coal right there in the ground so we could find it today when we needed it and be prosperous. You know what? Just it's moments like this that make me realize there was a real reason I didn't bring my tequila bottle and my straw with me to Washington, D.C. Because that's the kind of just right to it, just done. Because you can't take that kind of crazy without a little bit of help. Okay, so I've repeated a little bit of frivolity that is the story of Titanic Tuesday. Well, now we've got a little bit of a treat. Here's how this plays out. Now, Agnes, I'm watching the main chat room, and you can answer me there. Did you get the photos over to News Ninja Susan? Have folks gotten a chance to go to headonradionetwork.com and seen the LaRouche Obama as Hitler photo? And have they gotten to see that much more enigmatic and strange photo? I'm just waiting for Agnes to... Okay, Bob, they aren't up, and check your PM, please. Okay. Okay. If you're on hold, please stay that way. This is only going to take a couple of minutes to explain, and I've got an absolutely humming horn intern here.
I won't do it.
Yeah, you are. What? No, he's been sitting here waiting, and he's got. We've been talking about this since this afternoon because we took a walk. Like I said, we go down to the little neighborhood market and get stuff and come back. And on the way there, you know, we're country mouse gone to the city. And on the way there, I look down on the sidewalk. We're up on Capitol Hill. And you expect to see a lot of stuff on the sidewalks in a city. The one that kind of threw me, though, today was a photograph. It wasn't. I took a photograph of it. It was a... We're walking down the sidewalk, and we see this... You know the little modern dental flossers? I'm not talking about like a string of dental floss. It's a little plastic thing, and there's a little piece of floss gathered in it, and the end's kind of sharp, so you can pick it. Well, there's just one of those... Somebody's just thrown it down on the sidewalk. And I looked at Ferg. Ferg looked at me. And I looked at him and said, gee, I wonder who was flossing on the fly. And it took off from there. So what we have here, I'm hoping the technology will let everything come across. I'm going to take a moment. I'm going to move the microphone over for Ferg. It's a very, very brief composition, but that's the title of the song. Well, actually, yes. What is it? Here, let me see.
Ode to a
dental. No, you don't have a microphone yet, son.
Ode to a dental flosser lying on the sidewalk on Capitol Hill.
See, nobody can hear you yet.
Alrighty, people. This is called Ode to a Dental Flosser Lying on the Sidewalk on Capitol Hill.
Here she was, flossing on the fly, while on her way to meet a guy that she had never seen. On her way to the station in the capital of our nation, and she just wanted to make sure her smile was pearly and clean. But unknown to her mind, that piece of twine had left behind a big old hunk of spinach, and God, it was green. But she had thrown it away, and for her it was too late. She took that big green monster on her date. So wandering around the day, we found it where it lay. And as we walked on by, we had wondered who was flossing on the fly.
Flossing on the fly. All right, boom, boom, boom. You want boom, boom, boom? Okay, I'll give you boom, boom, boom. For the blues lady, Bo, for the blues lady, and all the other listeners out there as well. Boom, 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 boom. Gonna shoot you right down, right off your feet. Take you home with me. Boom, 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 boom. I love to see you walk up and down the floor, just like that. It knocks me dead right off of my feet when you're talking to me with that baby talk. Ha 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 ha. Whoa, baby.
It's not his debut, but it's been a while since Verge played. You know, if I want to hear a song about
shooting or some such, there we go. I want to hear a song about shooting or some such. I want to hear that. Yeah, I want to hear a nice piece of blues. Agnes, for some reason or other, you're not in the chat room now, but I'm told that we have Bill on line one. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Bill. How are you? Hey, first sounded good, man.
Where'd you go, Agnes?
I'm having a little distortion.
There, okay. Yeah, could I get Bill on line one, please? Or right, line two. Bill on line one, yeah.
Yeah.
Hold on 1 second, Bill.
Okay,
thank you. All right.
Gang, all day long they're saying,
chain. Gang, like the sound of the men working on the chain. Gang, all day long they work so hard till the sun is going down. Working on the highways and byways and wearing a frown. You hear them mourning their lives away. Then you hear somebody say, that's the sound of the men working on the chain.
Bear with us. There's evidently gremlins in the system again tonight, so I will take care of Bob.
Okay. You do have the answer.
And we'll be right back.
Could you send me some audio to make sure that I've got you?
Listening to the Head On Radio Network, and if you're on hold, please just hang in there with us. Bob will be back in just a second, and thank you for your patience. Okay. Well, we'll just go to the green news that I didn't have the right one. And we'll get this all sorted out and be right back with you. Thank you for your patience.
It's Tuesday, July 24, 2012.
The rain began on Saturday afternoon and just kept coming.
Deadly floods in China, drought in Europe. Food prices rise as extreme weather hammers the northern hemisphere.
A 2-degree rise would already put an unimaginably immense strain on our ecosystem.
Germany warns time is running out to reduce emissions.
It was not until this past year that we finally set a national standard in this country to deal with mercury.
EPA to pull back on new mercury standards? Plus,
you're not going to cram something down my throat that I don't want.
Mutant mosquitoes in Florida, pushing back against the Franken-skeeter.
All of that and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Environment. Why do we need it?
Great question, Stephen, and one we won't be answering on this edition of your Green News Report. Okay, Des, the historic extreme weather keeps on coming all over the planet.
Yes,
this week.
It's not yet as bad as last year. 2011 was a record year for billion-dollar weather disasters, but this year is hanging in.
And we're only half over.
Yes, in China over the weekend, the heaviest rains in 60 years caused flooding that has killed nearly 100 people with tens of thousands evacuated.
Tourists were caught up in China's new floods. Flash floods in the northern city of Baoding washed away the only access bridge.
The Chinese capital, Beijing, has been hit by its heaviest rains in more than 60 years.
37 people were killed in flooded Beijing alone, where the storm dumped 6 months of rain in less than a day, overwhelming the city's flood control infrastructure. But it's the worst by far in Bangladesh, where the unrelenting monsoon season has caused widespread record flooding in that low-lying country, displacing an estimated 20 million people. The extreme weather is hammering crops around the world, while the U.S. media has focused on record-breaking heat waves and drought in the U.S., severely impacting U.S. crops. Drought and heat are also damaging crops in major grain-producing regions in South America and Southern Europe. Soybean and corn commodities are now at all-time record highs. Climate scientists have warned for decades that higher global emissions leading to higher global temperatures would lead to an increasing trend in extreme and intense weather events. At an interim UN climate treaty negotiation in Berlin last week, German Chancellor Angela Merkel warned that nations need to work quickly to reach global emissions targets to keep global temperatures from rising above 2 degrees Celsius.
The 2 degrees Celsius limit is definitely not too ambitious. A 2-degree rise would already put an unimaginably immense strain on our ecosystem. We know that the voluntary measures that we have in place right now will not be enough.
So German Chancellor Angela Merkel, no climate change denier she.
No, definitely not. Meanwhile, back here in the U.S., Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Lisa Jackson was on the Colbert Report last week, understandably proud of the landmark mercury pollution standards for new coal-fired power plants that the Obama administration was finally able to pass.
We aren't done. It was not until this past year that we finally set a national standard in this country to deal with mercury.
Why should I worry about mercury?
Mercury is a neurotoxin. It is toxic to the brain.
But that was then. This is now. The next day after her appearance, the EPA announced it will review those historic news standards for mercury, soot, and other emissions for new power plants after hearing from industrial polluters and the electric utility industry, which are strongly opposed to the new rules, saying they are too costly and difficult to implement.
Wait a minute. These rules were called for by the Congress how many years ago?
Back in 1990.
And now they are finally brought forward by the EPA, and now the industry is complaining about them?
Oh, yes. They've been complaining the entire way. Now they want to weaken the ones that were finalized.
Knock me over with a mercury-filled feather.
Finally,
I, for one, don't care about your scientific crap.
Mutants in Florida. Mutant mosquitoes, that is. Residents in the Florida Keys are very upset over a controversial proposal from a British company to release genetically modified mosquitoes into the wild to prevent the spread of potentially deadly dengue fever.
Oh, man, this sounds like the beginning of a terrible or really good horror movie.
The plan, now awaiting FDA approval, would release modified male mosquitoes that are sterile into the wild to reduce the population of the one specific species of mosquito in the U.S. that carries dengue fever. The company says they pose no harm to humans. Critics warn of unintended consequences. Tom Clark, science editor of Britain's Channel 4, notes it also marks a new era in science.
It would set an important global precedent, one that could pave the way for new insects engineered against diseases like malaria.
Oh, man, what could possibly go wrong? For more on that story and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. You can also download our reports anytime via iTunes, listen to us on your mobile device via Stitcher, and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Bradley Herring. On her radio show, CNN contributor Dana Lash discussed Representative Michelle Bachmann's latest outlandish conspiracy theory that Islamists are working to infiltrate the American government in part through a State Department official.
Hillary Clinton essentially siding with the Muslim Brotherhood candidate in Egypt. And then it was discovered that her top aide, Huma Abedin, is essentially a member of the female version of the Muslim Brotherhood, the Muslim Sisterhood. It seems enough to me to pose questions as to why our government is becoming so close with a group that has been so hostile to the United States.
Lash's CNN colleagues did not agree. Here's Anderson Cooper 2 days earlier.
Now, you would think to make a charge like that, that they would have some actual evidence, right? You would think. But the truth is, they don't have any direct evidence.
Wolf Blitzer also dismissed Bachmann's claims, calling her charges McCarthy-like. For this story and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
girls and told the guys in the band. And we just, well, we just laughed. We didn't know what to say, didn't know what to do. We just hoped that they would pull him through. The doctor said, hey, doc, I'll take what's been offered. Cause I can't wait. As he left the docks, he ran into Mary. Voices are raising, things got hairy. Cause Bill went into a rage. I want my track to be back, Mary. Divorce. Poor old Bill got thrown out of court. Cause he couldn't control it. And as Mary shook her lawyer's hand, you can hear Bill laughing cause the way he ran. With the tractor he went and stole it. I got my tractor back, Mary.
I'm gonna think that maybe that's a cue, and that maybe we're back on the air. It would be lovely if we are. And I'm waiting just to see if.
Yes, we are, Bob. Loud and clear.
Oh yay! Okay. Oh, we are. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, dear. And thank you, you all for your patience there. The last song, of course, you heard, Leanna Rose. And we have been, there's an offer on the table. Two of the discs are gone, but a $50 contribution gets you this album that is not available in the U.S. Leanna Rose, Soak Up the World, wasn't released in the United States. So the only place you can really get it is here at the Horn, and you get it along with the bonus of helping us keep things going here and get to the end of what has been an otherwise tough July. Plus, you'll also be matching in with Sal's Titanic Tuesday Challenge, and we've got $90 to go to meet that. Thank you very much for kicking in and getting it all started. And we do have folks on the phone. And here's hoping that part works. Let's go to Bill. Hey, Bill.
Good evening, Robert.
Ah, thank God you're there.
Well, it's tough, these remote jobs.
Yeah, it is. And it's especially so when things just don't work out the way you'd like for them to.
Well, I just told Agnes, you know, I spent a long part of my sideline life repairing televisions. If something can go wrong, it will.
Absolutely.
Whoops.
And apparently it just did. I mean, it did just a few minutes ago, but you're still there and I'm still here, and hallelujah.
Well, my big mouth, you know. By the way, Joe Ferdy did a nice job.
I will. I wanted to...
On the Hooker song there. Boom.
Yeah,
boom.
Thank you.
Was that John Lee Hooker or Fighting Joe? I get them confused. I'm getting old.
That was, well, I mean, he got introduced to it via John Lee Hooker.
Ah, yeah. John Lee was a hell of a player, but he was a hard man from the guys I talked to, he was a hard man to record with because he had that one-man guitar player situation where when he decided to change, he would.
Yeah, and everybody else just had to follow along as closely as possible.
Yeah.
If you hang up and take the ride.
Yeah, that was it, you know. If you ever want to see something funny, I've got a capital contract that was sent to me in 1969. When you get to the bottom of it, it says, bend over and sign here. That's what really hurts you. But getting to some serious stuff, these people who I've been hearing for days now about how every six other people had guns, blah, blah, blah. They
right.
must never have talked to a policeman. The bars that I played in University Circle in Cleveland were hangouts for guys from the 5th District, which is one of the toughest, nastiest districts in the city. And we talked plenty. And if you wanted to get 10 opinions, interrogate 5 witnesses.
Right, because even somebody who says they saw something can eventually, maybe. I didn't.
And
right.
shooting in the dark at a guy wearing Kevlar, and oh my, are these people crazy or what?
Not just the dark, in the smoke. He threw a smoke bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you're going to have a bunch of goobers out there with Glocks in their pants. And, what do you mean you're out of Juju Bees?
It was a terrible thing. You can imagine if people are blazing away. Huh. Always scared me that, I carried because of what I did for a living, the hours and where I lived for about 6 years. And I didn't like it one bit, but I liked it a lot better than, well, the cops used to tell me they'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6, was their opinion.
Yeah.
And the one guy in, these guys were guys I admired because they were Vietnam vets. And they had been up against, some of them would tell you, they had been up against some of the best in the world that they ever saw.
Right.
And they didn't have a thing to prove anymore. One cop who was private ended up shooting a guy who was robbing people at a rapid transit station. And the guy pulled his gun and misfired twice, and the cop dropped him. And I talked to the cop the next day, and I said, how you feel? He says, man, I don't care how righteous it may be that I'm saving my own life, he says, it's still a horrible thing. And that guy gained about 20 points right then and there in my estimation of a human being, you know. And that's, these people who live in another world, just unbelievable.
And incredibly offensive.
Yeah, they just don't get it. And sometimes at my age, it scares me because in so many ways, I'm standing by the freeway exit, so, you know, so to speak, time-wise, and we're going back to some of the same stuff. Bachman and her anti-Muslim stuff. Is Tail Gunner Joe back on Earth walking around looks like a lady?
That's no lady. That's Michelle Bachman.
Yeah, same stuff. You know, the same stuff that I saw go down in my life once with that HUAC and all that. They went after Ike, for God's sake, and Marshall. Being pro-communist, some of these people. I know, I sent you some music. I think I sent you this.
Yeah, you did. It was magnificent.
The country singer, yeah. The Joe Stalin thing that I sent down is funny as hell, except it's not funny.
I think that's the first time I've ever heard a Joe Stalin song.
Yeah, there's a couple of them, I guess. Because that's how, I mean, it was so serious. In my childhood, I didn't know how serious it was, but it was all over the place. This Cold War was ice cold. Thank God it stayed cold. Because it was, you know, it was scary at times. The Cuban Missile Crisis, I was 19 when that was going on. And I thought I knew everything about it from the news until I read a book about a year ago. A book from the Library of Congress called, I think it was called One Minute Before Midnight or something like that. And it was just, Curtis LeMay wanted to go down there and preemptively strike the Russians in Cuba. And one of the guys who was the best in it was old man Khrushchev. He had seen enough, you know?
Right. He and Kennedy together had to stave off their own generals.
Yeah, and to stave off the morons in their government. Absolutely. But I won't keep you too much, but yeah, I just had to blow off about these idiots that, if you're one-on-one with somebody, there's a potential that being armed is, it might help you if the guy doesn't have the drop on you.
Nine times out of ten it doesn't, though. And I saw stunning statistics. I think it was David in South Carolina, Bill, who put up the statistics on his Facebook page, and I think I read them on the air last week, about the number of the percentages of firearms that are used against the owner as opposed to in defense of the owner.
Well,
and the odds of being shot with it, the odds of suicide, the odds of accidental shootings,
yes.
And how they go just stratospherically skyward.
Yeah, I live in an area where some guy tried getting into the joint one night, and I had a pit mix and a Labdo mix, and they alerted me, and I was half in the bag, What the hell was I, 38, And I had been out with my first wife that night. We had gone out for her birthday, and so I would go out, get half loaded. And after the morning, I saw that somebody had knocked the door open and was reaching for the chain on the lock when they nailed him. Because I thought they were fighting each other. They were growling so hard. So the next thing I did was borrow a buddy of mine's wholesale car, go out to an alarm place, and wire the house. And I also had a big Mossberg 8-shot. But my decision on that kind of stuff was take what you want from downstairs. If you can get, once that alarm goes off, you can grab something and run and get out of here. And if the dogs have you by the leg, tough luck for you. And if you start up the stairs, that's when I may have to do something. Because once, people are invading that privacy of your house in the middle of the night, that's another, but it never happened.
No.
I put the alarm in there, somebody set it off one night and then ran like hell. Because it was there. And that's what they're for. But yeah, I'm so delighted not to walk around with that bulge under my arm that people thought was a sub sandwich. That's a little ridiculous. It just, as you say, it's kind of useless 99% of the time. And another thing I was going to ask you about, you're down in Washington. That reminds me of the record company that sent me that contract. The same idea, the major label. Damn blind luck, but I questioned a few things, like no guarantee to release, no producer to help me with it. It's like, you don't want it.
What am I signing? What are you doing for me?
Exactly. And how those things were. Every option was in the company favor, and they had basically owned you for 3 years. And other people weren't interested in the band, and I said, you're right, fellas, we're not going to do it. We won't sign it. And, okay. Because I was there, like my old man's generation, I was there, I wanted to make a living doing what I liked to do rather than something I hated. A living wage was enough. If I could do that, I'd be happy with it. And it was a different time and a place when you could go out and if you helped sell enough booze and if you found the right guys, and I worked for guys who treated me honestly, and that was, tough to do in that racket, But those places you see in D.C., Thomas Circle, McPherson Circle.
Yeah.
Both of those names were guys who fought with the... McPherson was a corps commander under Grant at Vicksburg and also under Sherman on the Atlanta campaign. And, of course, Thomas was one of the best, George. And DuPont, too. There was an Admiral DuPont that went into... I think he was in on the attack on Charleston Harbor that didn't take with all the ironclads, that didn't succeed. But,
Yeah, Thomas had to live in the shadows of Sherman and Grant.
Yeah.
But he was an excellent commander. And not only that, unlike Robert E. Lee, who committed treason against his country when it all went down, Thomas was a Virginian who said, I'm with the United States Army. I'm staying with the United States Army. This is my country. And I swore an oath. Whereas Robert E. Lee just said, oath schmoth.
Well, that's the whole thing about, you know, when you talk about the AIC Act to me, you're talking about what's really terrible in Appalachia, but these people don't give a crap. If they decide to make money up in this area, they're fracking like hell over in Ashtabula County.
Oh, yeah. And they're fracking in Pennsylvania, they're fracking in West Virginia, they're fracking in southern Ohio. Absolutely.
And whatever reaches you or me, they don't give a crap.
No.
And I've always been, ever since I've changed my views on the Civil War, at first, the first thing I read was a book called Robert E. Lee, and I looked up to that guy so strongly until I started reading more and more and more, and, you know, your whole attitude changes when you reach maturity. I wanted to go to West Point until I read All Quiet on the Western Front. And I said, I don't think I really want to do this.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you to take the pass, exactly. Bill, it's awful good to hear from you, and I'm glad.
Well, you take care, Bob, and hang in, man.
All right, and I will tell him you spoke well of him.
And tell your wife, tell Agnes, thanks for her patience.
Oh, okay. Thank you for yours, and you just told her. So thanks a lot, Bill. Have a good evening.
Take care.
Bye now. That's Bill, our buddy Mr. Stress from Cleveland, bluesman extraordinaire. And if he's still there, Agnes, give me Preston on line two, please.
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Preston, how are you?
I'm doing all right. That was interesting hearing what effect All Quiet on the Western Front had on Bill. The power of literature, once again.
Yeah, the power of the mind, the power of I think that's a very moral book. And it presents something that, because it's so easy to glorify slaughter. To be quite honest about it is entirely a different thing.
Yeah. And it usually doesn't pay as well either. You know, so many get.
If it did pay well, Preston, War is a Racket would be an international bestseller, and the Butler family would still be trying to spend the profits.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly, and they'd be making a movie out of it, maybe little action figures, soldiers resisting war, or calling out the corporate fascists, an FDR action figure too, and oh yeah. Yeah, you're familiar with Butler's, you know, assisting FDR when the right-wingers of their day were trying to do their corporate coup against him.
Yeah, let's see, who all was in that? The Bush family was part and parcel of it, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, yeah. Fascinating history. And but through a lot of effort, people are learning that story. You know, of course, there's so much of the glorifying war. I mean, almost the entire action-adventure genre is heroic Rambo or Jean-Claude Van Damme, and this force and power, and, you know, then there's always a woman by the side of these honky guys, too. I mean, it's the same tactic. Do you remember that kind of icon of an earlier day where there's like a caveman, and he has a club in one hand, and he's dragging a woman by the hair with the other?
Oh, yeah. That's iconic, right.
And the same thing is going on today. If you look at, like, the ads for a lot of movies, you'll see a handsome man with a gun in one hand and holding, you know, pulling a woman by the hand in another.
Well, if you think about the iconic first Star Wars poster, wasn't that the very thing?
Remember with
Luke with his blaster pointing out and Leia kneeling at his side?
Yeah, yeah. So just being aware of that, you know, I think there are some decent things you can pull from a movie like Star Wars. I know Joseph Campbell was involved in that, and, you know, a lot of mythology has this imagery that mixes things, including some aspects of human life that aren't so attractive. But just to be more mindful of it and try to get a better balance of stuff. we're inundated with the violence. Rhianne Eisler writes about this in her book, The Chalice and the Blade, and she compared societies that had icons like blades and shields and stuff like that all over the place versus societies that had things like chalices and bowls and musical instruments and emphasized that stuff. And
that's fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was I was reading an article by I think his last name is Florida, actually, over at the Atlantic Cities blog, and it was a real live, honest to goodness scientific statistical approach to gun ownership in the states. And one of the things that the people he was citing to identified is that you have more gun violence in states that have what he referred to, what the researchers referred to, Preston, as honor cultures.
Okay. And again, who's defining what is honor, what is strength?
Yeah.
A warrior. I remember reading a chief, maybe Sitting Bull, I'm not sure, but he said something like their concept of warrior is very different than, you know, the West, which is, you know, soldiers so oftentimes, but they're like, we think of a warrior as someone who, you know, stewards the earth and takes care of the kids and takes care of the elderly and the sick and the most vulnerable in society. It's not about taking life. It's about nurturing life. I'll send you a link to that book I mentioned because it was really a breakthrough in a lot of ways and continues to affect a lot of, you know, women's studies and studies of art.
I see that very much.
History. And I'm sure that guy, the guy here in Aurora in Denver, I'm sure he saw a lot of, I bet it was nonstop violence. And you know, maybe he sought help, and it depends on what kind of help he got. Again, who's defining help? And, Mike, I would not at all be surprised if he was on quite a mix of very powerful psychoactives. And, again, I know people have found a lot of relief through Zoloft and stuff like that, and more power to them. Sometimes, though, people don't find relief, and they get their doses amped up, and then they get, you know, Wellbutrin added, or I forget, one of them in particular has been implicated in a lot of these mass shootings. A guy named Dr. Peter Bregan has done a lot of work on it. And sadly, you know, the quantity was unique, but not the loss of life. I was listening to Randy Rhodes last night, and she mentioned, I think we average 34 gun deaths a day. That's including suicides and accidents. And I heard a paramedic call into Tom Hartman's show and say something like, I had 6,000 patient encounters during my career, and I dealt with a lot of gun injuries and gun deaths, and I did not come across one where, oh, a guy protected his house from a home invader and shot the bad guy. It was constantly aggressive assaults and domestic attacks and kids finding the gun. And we had a story here in Denver in Colorado Springs where a family went to the shooting range together, the parents and like a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old, and on their way back to the car, the 10-year-old accidentally shot his mom in the head. And when this topic comes up, it's amazing how mobilized the NRA members are. I mean, they are on it immediately and really fanatical. And again, back to Randy Rhodes, she pointed out how so many of these NRA members, they actually disagree with the policies of the NRA when they're polled.
That's absolutely the truth, Preston. I mean, I'm looking at five different measures here in which the NRA membership disagree. But let's understand that the NRA is not about its membership. The NRA is a lobby for gun and ammunition manufacturers.
Yep.
87% of non-NRA gun owners and 74% of NRA gun owners support requiring criminal background checks on gun owners, and 79% of NRA members support criminal background checks on gun shop employees. They support the membership does prohibiting terrorist watch list members from acquiring guns. They support mandating that gun owners just tell the police when their gun is stolen. That's 64% of NRA members. And then 74% of NRA member gun owners support limiting concealed carry permits to people who have completed safety training courses and are over 21, 63% of NRA members support that. The over 21 part, what in God's name is wrong with the 37% that don't?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nobody who's ever been convicted of a violent misdemeanor or arrested for domestic violence should ever be given a concealed carry permit. Lo and behold, 75% of NRA members support that. 68% support the domestic violence restriction. I mean, there is some common sense out there, and I guess I'm just a weirdo for thinking that if a police officer has to pass an annual review that might take a quick peek at whether or not he's still she is still psychologically stable to be walking around with a firearm, that maybe the amateurs ought to pass the same thing too. But that's a start.
I agree. And even, you know, looking beyond our own country, you know, the other countries that are similarly trying to, you know, make their own decisions around these this gun industry and how they want to regulate it. And they are constantly ramming their product down the throat, or they'll corrupt some politician and get them to buy a big load of weapons, and so many human rights people throughout the world, you know, they see these small arms from Smith & Wesson and others as the real weapon of mass destruction in their countries. And apparently there's a bill coming up at the UN, and we have a lot of misinformation, you know, a lot of shrieking hysteria about the UN's going to come in and the global government, and they're going to enslave us all. You know who I'm sure you know who I'm referring to. This is Alex Jones has been screaming about this issue. And
yes, but Preston, let's be clear, not just Alex Jones. I had audio last week of Willard Romney telling a bunch of mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking faithful that he wouldn't let the United Nations take away our Second Amendment rights because we done fought for we done fought for liberty and independence. Okay? And he was talking about that same UN treaty. It is a UN arms treaty that specifically states that it has no impact on any member nation's citizens' right to keep and arm bears, but that it does seek to keep deadly firearms out of the drug and terrorist trade.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you have to dig around to find the answers to all this stuff that gets hurled around. And I found a good response on Think Progress. It's something about, you know, the right wing's latest, you know, conspiracy theory about the gun grabbers or something like that. And it goes into the details. So, and you mentioned LaRouche. You know, something I realized recently is the, you know, kind of the current version of the John Birch Society. I mean, if you look at Wikipedia, and, you know, some of the people, some of your listeners who are younger may not be familiar with this group at all, but it was a reactionary group founded by Papa Koch, of the Koch brothers.
Absolutely.
That's right. Rabidly anti-communist. Some things progressives would agree with them on. For example, the Birch Society was against the Vietnam War. They wanted the U.S. to pull out. But their reasoning was that they felt that it was a ploy by the Johnson administration, the Vietnam War was, to make the U.S. communist. So, again, just kind of these odd theories that get churned up, but generally they're very reactionary, very right-wing. It's kind of libertarian capitalism and things of that kind. Can't stand the left, for sure. And, you know, I'm sorry, Alex Jones is John Birch 2.0. It's
And see, the funny thing is, the number of people that he snookered during the Bush administration, because during the W administration, he made all kinds of noises that made people think he was progressive.
Okay. And he still does to a degree. You know, he's anti-GMO.
But, you know, it's like you and I have had conversations, and other people as well here on the Horn, Preston, about Ron Paul.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Look at who Ron Paul has endorsed lately. And, I mean, it's a really creepy list, okay? Let's see. Ted Cruz. Are you familiar with this guy?
No.
He's running for Senate. He's running. He's a Texan. And, I mean, he's a real Lulu. He's bragged about his role in executing an undocumented immigrant. He says George Soros and the United Nations are coming for your golf game. Really, the UN's going to outlaw golf. And lo and behold, Senator Rand Paul and cranky old Ron Paul have endorsed this goon. Okay, you want to know how sick this guy is? One of the first things to come out in the wake of the Aurora shooting was an attempt to fundraise on the backs of the dead by a PAC that supports Ted Cruz.
Yeah, that's amazing. And did you see Alex Jones on what he was saying about the Colorado shooting?
Yeah, it's a false flag operation set up by the Obama administration to give them a reason to come in and take all our goons.
Again, look at how they flipped the narrative that they knew was going to come around after the shooting about gun control issues, and he was able to turn it into the gun industry is under assault issue. Because this is just staged by the administration because they're coming after our guns and they want to get this UN thing passed. They're saying the same thing about Fast and Furious, that whole case, which started under Bush.
And see, that's so important that you know that. Fast and Furious had nothing to... How can Eric Holder speak to the origins of Fast and Furious when it happened under Alberto Torture Boy Gonzalez?
And you notice how they're always, hey, guns don't kill people, people kill people. And but these particular guns, the Fast and Furious guns, oh, my God, how could they let those guns down there? I mean, it's just so
But see, that kind of cognitive dissonance would cause your head to explode, Preston.
I know.
When it is able to simply entertain them two together and sort of, you know, that hive brain puts them off in one little beehive cell, and the government's going to get our guns, goes in another cell, but Fast and Furious was a terrible, terrible thing, goes in another cell, and they walk happily around, I don't know, whistling Dixie, and it just beats me.
Yeah, you know, and so much of our economy. You know, they're talking about guns being, you know, fewer guns around. If they're worried about a big government with a lot of guns coming to enslave us, then why are they always advocating for a larger military, larger NSA, a larger Halliburton private mercenaries, larger prison complex, armed everything?
That's the part of big government
you know,
that they like.
You know, Zimmerman, too. You know, they... arm those people, you know, to the teeth. You know, you got to keep the 99% at bay. Again, all this stuff could be overcome. There could be real security. Again, who's defining security? Real security with more justice, you know, more justice in our media so we're not, have all these toxic images coming at us.
I do have to mention one thing, Preston, and not by way of self-congratulation, but I'm glad when I see other online organizations asking the questions that I ask first. And that's almost too egotistical for me to even say.
No, that's great. It's good to recognize our, you know, what we achieve.
In the process of trying to get my head around what happened out there, I wasn't deliberately trying to think of things that other people weren't thinking of, but it's just where my mind goes because, you know, it's how I'm tuned into America. And the fact of the matter is, one of the things I mentioned early on Friday evening was, you know, the fact that I'm sure that no one in the for-profit or mainstream media, is thinking about the victims beyond the body count. But lo and behold, here today, I saw the story of Caleb Medley. Have you heard about him?
I have. And the massive health
care. He's an induced coma. Yeah, he's in an induced coma in an intensive care unit. He and his wife had gone to see the movie because she was to have her pregnancy, labor induced a couple of days later. He was a rising star on the Denver comedy scene, and he got shot in the eye, and he has no health insurance, and they're saying now that when he comes out of the coma, whatever shape he's in, he's going to be looking at $2 million in medical bills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another huge injustice, you know.
I mean, what has Colorado's position been, Preston, on whether or not they're going to opt in, now that there's an opting process? Is Colorado going to opt in to the expansion of Medicaid? Because I'm pretty sure young Caleb would probably fit in it.
Yeah, I would imagine we would, actually, between Salazar and Udall as the senators. And you know,
but it's the governor's call.
Oh, okay. My mistake. And, well, Hickenlooper, he's a Democrat, kind of, certainly pro-fossil fuels, gas fracking, big time. He loves that stuff, and some other issues. But on the health care, I don't think I've heard directly, but it wouldn't surprise me if we opted in.
I hope you do. I hope you do. Our own state government in West Virginia, our Democratic governor, who is boycotting the Democratic convention because of the Obama war on coal, said he hasn't made his mind up yet whether or not working poor people deserve to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick, which is just breathtakingly cruel. But this young man was he had made it through a round of a comedy competition in Denver. And lo and behold, you know, uninsured, but, you know, promising career. And now he's laying, and you know, how do you get well, Preston, when you're trying to get well and you get handed a bill for $2 million? Now, meanwhile, this guy's got, you know, this guy, who's he gonna sue? Who's gonna cover his bills? How about the firearm manufacturers? How about the gun dealers who sold this guy the firearms? How lawyered up is he going to have to get in order to do that? You know, the shooter doesn't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. But this young man who had his life forever changed, this young man's newborn son who has had his life forever diminished, who do they sue? Where do they get justice? You know, these people who want to put their gun rights over the rights of ordinary Americans, they're all about law and order and justice and protection and home defense. Where does Caleb Medley, Preston, where does Caleb Medley go for justice in this country?
Yeah, good question. You know, on both these issues, healthcare and kind of the militarization of the culture, I want to take a moment to give thanks to people like Michael Moore. You know, there have been all those big action-adventure movies, but then there was Bowling for Columbine.
Yeah.
And that connection that he made between, you know, like when he went to the Lockheed Martin plant in Denver and made that connection, just like Eisenhower did, of the military-industrial complex not only affecting our economy and our science, but our very spirits. He may have used the word soul. And then we've got the video games too, that again, Michael Moore, you know, showed such a bright light on that and on the healthcare issue. And wow. So, you know, so many injustices going on, but, you know, thankfully there are people like that, you know, trying to set the record straight and
doing the work. Preston, it's awfully good to hear from you, and I'm glad we were able to make it all work. Thank you for being so patient while we sorted out the technical issues.
Uh, Sure thing. Thank you for being out there, and thank you also for connecting me with Kevin in Colorado Springs. He's doing some great work there advocating for mass transit and other things. I could, again, bring some sane infrastructure and ideas to our culture.
Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you, Preston. Have a wonderful evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye now. That's Preston, the Horns resident optimist, calling from Colorado. Darlene just sent in an email, and there's a lot of good sense in this. And I had not looked at it this way. Darlene said, honestly, though, just exactly how sensible are the 75% majority of NRA members who do want gun control? They continue to be members in spite of the fact that the NRA is not representing their wishes, right? What if that 75% dumped their NRA membership? That might have some impact, and Darlene's absolutely right. Because there's no democracy inside, you know, looking at the way the NRA is run is like watching so-called corporate governance. It's the same thing. There's no democracy for the rank and file there. They are told what to think and what to believe and what the policy of the NRA will be without regard to what they think or they want. Because the NRA does not give a damn about its so-called membership. They are a lobby organization for the gun industry, for the firearm industry and the ammunition industry, and it's as simple as that. A little reminder before we go back to the phones, we do have we have Sal's Titanic Tuesday challenge on the table. We are $10 toward the 90 more that we need to raise before we get to the part where he pays off on the challenge. So any configuration in which you kick in is more than welcome. And anybody reminder anybody giving more than 50 will get a copy of Leanna Rose's Soak Up the World, not available here in the United States. And what's more, it will be signed by Ms. Rose. See? Yeah, it'll be. That's special. So the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. Agnes tells me we've got Edward on the phone. Are you there, Edward?
I need to apologize to Edward. I hit the wrong button, Bob.
Oh, no, not the wrong button. Did you throw the third switch, Agnes?
Yes, I did. I didn't mean to. My fingers need some WD-40. That was suggested in chat earlier, and, you know, I think that's a good idea.
It might very well be, dear. But, you know, you're doing a wonderful job for not having been behind the chair producing for 5 years.
Yeah, it's... Well, now, if you lose one caller, you're not doing a good job. So I'm fair to middling, but I'm sure with practice I'll get back into the hang of things.
Just in time for me to come home and you not have to do it anymore. I understand. Because, you know, I know you'll quit again. You'll go on strike or something, right? Not for higher wages, just for wages. Well, I'm sorry we lost Edward. You may recall we talked to Edward the other night and he was mentioning his potato bread recipe, and he sent it in, and I got it earlier today. I've already shared it with our chat room moderator, Lottie, who may have also shared it down the line from there. I'm looking forward to getting home and trying it, because it looks like some kind of delicious. Well, Edward, if you're still there, please don't be afraid to dial back in, because I know Agnes feels terrible right now. She didn't mean to do it, really. Really, she didn't. We've got a couple of minutes left, but not long, on this Titanic Tuesday edition of the Horn. I guess we'll go ahead and pretty much wrap things up. I'm proud of the fact that we've gotten through two shows that have been tolerable in this remote configuration. I mean, there are radio networks out there that use $3,000 and $5,000 and $10,000 and $30,000 and $50,000 worth of equipment to get this to you. And yeah, we screw up a little bit, but we do it on what you make possible. And that's what's so special about all this. It all happens because of you. It all begins with your decision to share your finite time in conversation with us. And nothing is more inspiring, and nothing is sweeter. Thank you to all of you who have reached out and who helped. Now I need to offer up one show note. I'm not sure if it's going to be tomorrow night or Thursday night or Friday night. But one of those evenings we're probably going to be across, and Agnes can tell you all about how much fun it is. We'll be across on Capitol Hill trying to talk to actual members of Congress to get them to sign onto the ACAC. That may foreclose a show, and I will let everybody know if that is indeed going to be the case. So if that happens, there will be advance warning. I'll tweet it. I'll tell Agnes. Agnes will tell News Ninja Susan, and we'll all go from there. So that's pretty much the show for tonight, and thank you for all you do to keep all of this going. We are live on Capitol Hill. We're live at the headquarters of the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign. And you can learn everything you might possibly want to know about the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign simply by going to ACHECT.org. You can learn about the legislation. You can learn how you can help. You can read the bill itself. It's all there. ACHECT.org. And as is the case with every program, thanks go out tonight to our all-volunteer staff, to our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky, to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks go out to Dancing Texas Betsy. That's wonderful. Thanks, of course, to John Fox. He and I will sort out some of this. John Fox, of course, also the originator of the Leanna Rose fundraiser this to round out the month. Remember, Ms. Rose will be signing the discs that you contribute and to receive, and he'll mail them direct from Australia. Thank you, John. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. None of this happens without the streaming servers and the archiving of Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. He's been at this for 10 years. And I like to mention that because progressive radio would not be the same without him. The landscape would be very, very different and very much more barren without WhiteRoseSociety.org. And of course, our enduring thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and, as mentioned, ACHECT.org. Thanks to all of you. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next, only on the Horn.
Okay, Tokyo.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy!
It's been a lovely day here in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C.
Nah, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. We are in Washington, D.C. We are on Capitol Hill. We are live from the headquarters of the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign, live from HHQ. Practically a stone's throw, though we'll certainly not be throwing any stones, from the Supreme Court of the United States, as a matter of fact. Yes, indeed, it is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, not named for the ship, tragic, well, not that word, not named for that sadly woe-begotten ocean liner, no, but named instead for a great moment in right-wing moranity. Jim told us about it a couple of weeks ago, you may recall. Long have we sought for a name for our Tuesday program. After all, we have Moran Monday, we have prayer meeting Wednesday, we have Thorn in the Side Thursday, we have Friday on the Front Porch, and poor little Tuesday was left to wander around nameless on the calendar. But no more. Not since we found out that a nameless right-wing babbling idiot was telling his idiot mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking followers that the reason there are seashells that can be found in geologic strata underneath the hills and hollers of West Virginia is because of the movement of the Titanic plates. And thus, yes indeed, it is Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. America's liberal voice, and we are to be found at headonradionetwork.com. There's a listen line.